being bound by the ropes of Varuna. Samahanam, befitting respect. Not upajahar, offered purbabat, like before. Nanam, he offered obeisances. Murna, with the head. Ashuvilokalochana, eyes inundated with tears. Sarida, with shyness. Nichina, downward. Mukha, face. Babuvaha, he so became. Purport. Since Bali Maharaj had been arrested by Lord Bamanadev, he was certainly to be considered an offender. Bali Maharaj seriously felt that he was an offender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Certainly, Prahlad Maharaj would not like this. Therefore, Bali Maharaj was ashamed and hung his head. Mukam karoti bachalam bangalam yati vinda patam ham bande shirum vinda talam adana nasyantanta idam yachi puna puna shima rupa padam bhoja durisham janma janma. Ananda lila maya vigrahaya mabhidhya chavishundaraya prasmaya mahaprema sapadana chitanya chindraya namo namaste Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shedvaita Girara Shivasari Gorbhaya Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Tasmai Bali Varuna Pashudam Trita Samahanam No Pachahara Urvavat Nanam Amudna Ashurvilo Lochana Savida Nichina Mukho Bahuva. Being bound by the ropes of Varuna, Bali Maharaj could not offer befitting respect to Prahlad Maharaj as he had before. Rather, he simply offered respectful obeisances with his head, his eyes being inundated with tears, and his face lowered in shame. So Bali Maharaj, having exalted grandfather as Prahlad Maharaj, he had, of course, nowadays it may not be so, but obviously in such an exalted line, great respect, even up till now, should be shown to the grandfather. And especially if your grandfather happens to be Prahlad Maharaj, this is not an ordinary situation. So here, the main idea is that he couldn't do it, and therefore he put his head down in shame, and he felt that he did something wrong also. And the previous verses also. Bali Maharaj was describing the fortune position this way. And 12, 13, interesting. Always forget, it says here, Prahlad Maharaj, his dark body resembled a black ointment for the eyes, which is pretty dark. He's a pretty dark fellow. I know I didn't paint him that way. But it's interesting. And his long arms, beautiful eyes like the petals of a lotus. And finally this verse today. Simply offered respects with his head. And as it comes later, I'm just seeing here, when Prahlad Maharaj is offering prayers, he offers prayers, of course, mostly in the seventh canto, ninth chapter. But in the fifth canto, there are Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, several. And here, there's more. So Srimad Bhagavatam is actually nothing but nectar. And there are more nectarine things, and it's all amrit. But we see that the prayers are more Amrit. This is the best, the Bhagavatam is the best. Kimba Ishvara. Shrimad Bhagavate Mahamunikite Kimba Parayara Ishvara. What is the use of any other shastra or any of the books? Or, of course, in the old days, they didn't just copy ordinary books. We don't find ordinary books coming down from time immemorial. Nobody wrote them. No one cared about them. We don't find that. They copy the shastras, the most important thing. And sharam sharam samudritam, out of all these so many shastras, and cream, Srimad Bhagavate is the cream. And all other things are just put aside. Dharma projita kaita bhota parama nirmatsaranam. So, and then the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, we have our wonderful crescendos. Oh, I don't know all the musical terms also, but I remember that the very day or so that we discovered that Prabhupada had chanted the prayers of Kunti Devi, somehow there were so many things, and it was just Dhrishtaketu was transcribing things as he was wont to do. Maybe it was his job, but he did it well. And before there was archives, back in 75-6, and then one day he said, oh, I discovered something amazing. Prabhupada chanting Kunti's prayers, and he's chanting Sukadev's prayers. So I said, well, I want to hear that. Give me a copy of that. And so when you hear, because ordinarily, even if you're reading Bhagavatam, you might look at Sukadev's prayers or something, but when you hear somebody chant that, especially Srila Prabhupada, then very, very more, and think, wow, that's amazing. Not only the fact that he chose those to chant, but the way he chants that, very more powerful. If you simply read it, you think, oh, that's nice verses, really nice. Then when you hear that. So, along that line, Prabhupada also very much favored, we don't have a tape of that, but he favored the Prahlad Maharaj's instructions and his prayers. And so when we read that, and we know our spiritual master was very much enamored certain parts of the Bhagavatam like that. All the Bhagavatam, Pati Shloki, Pati Akshray. So, and Prahlad Maharaj, I did a painting of Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, and Sukracharya. And one of the few letters that I got from Prabhupada, he said, actually there's Bali and Sukra, Bali's in the middle and Prahlad and Sukracharya on the side. There's the eighth canto and a picture of the, he's offering a sacrifice in the middle. And we were questioning Prabhupada whether, I was asking if Sukracharya would have a beard. So, but somehow we were still engaged, Prabhupada was traveling too much, did the painting, by the time the answer came back, already painted him with a beard, and Prabhupada said, no, no beard, avoid beards as much as possible. So, but he, the painting has the beard, because we couldn't catch up with Prabhupada. So, and then, during that time, I had to meditate on Prahlad Maharaj a lot in seventh canto, right? He's engaging with his schoolmates. There's one painting, Prahlad Maharaj. I got the idea that he should just be doing the kirtan, jumping up and down, which that was kind of a fun painting. Other people helped me too with the background and such, but pretty ecstatic. And then later, after Prahlad Maharaj had, he had gone traveling, and then I was engaged doing a painting of Prahlad Maharaj, and he was searching out various saintly persons, and he came to the fat, a Jagarabriti sage, doing the python. So that was kind of ecstatic to meditate on Prahlad Maharaj traveling throughout the universe. How many people here can travel throughout the universe? Anybody here? Hands up. Not many. But somehow he was traveling throughout the universe, it describes. And when Prahlad Maharaj came to that sage, well, he was avadhut, complete avadhut. He was quite a chubby avadhut. And it doesn't say that he bowed down or anything, but he became very ecstatic. Usually he wouldn't talk to anybody. But when we saw Prahlad Maharaj, became very enlivened, he started to speak. But Prahlad Maharaj was some of his confidential associates, and they came across this fellow who was just lying there, but obviously naked, disheveled, it was like Judd Barat. But he was chubby. I mean, obviously he wasn't going to look for anything to eat, but so this was a puzzlement, transcendental puzzlement, Prahlad Maharaj. I don't think it ever really gets answered. Basically, the idea is that although he didn't go out looking for anything, he was explained to Prahlad Maharaj and he gave wonderful instructions. He's called the perfect, ideal person, actually. Instructions of an ideal person, something like that. So Prahlad Maharaj was a very enlivening person. Imagine having him as your grandfather. So Bali Maharaj feeling very shameful, he's bound up. So the lesson learned, and Prahlad Maharaj certified that Bali Maharaj had become a bit puffed up with his power. And one of the threads of this very instructive story is that no matter who we are, it's very easy to get puffed up. And this is throughout the Bhagavatam, whether any place you look, but so many of these stories are smashing. Even Bali Maharaj, a Mahajan, his false ego gets smashed. Our desires in this material world. Prahlad Maharaj just had a verse himself. Said one of his verses: "Om Nabo Bhagavate Narasingaya Namaste Jastejase Abhya Bhavavajanaka Vajidangsta Kamashayam." He's praying to Narasingadev that you please Vajranaka with your nails that are like lightning bolts, thunderbolts. Vajranaka, Vajradangsta with your teeth also like Vajra, the thunderbolt. Take away Kamashayam, all my material desires in this material world. So this is the qualification of these great devotees. They're unflinching. If you hear about, even in modern times, you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, can you just try to understand, nowadays people commit suicide, take a lot of drugs. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all of his, everything was taken away when he was like something like 12. He was in a fairly wealthy surroundings, but then everyone started dying. All his siblings died. In fact, even when he was in school, nowadays, we hear all the complaints about the Gurukula, definitely many things, but bad things happen to good people. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was in school, his younger brother, the teacher was so horrible, this one particular teacher was so kind of vicious, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur's younger brother, who, Haridas, he was like 4 years old. He wanted to kill the teacher with a machete. And the teacher was so abusive. And this Haridas, his brother, was so angry. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a little wary, very super intelligent. And when there was a nap time, the teacher was taking his nap. And Haridas had a machete. He was just about to cut the teacher's throat. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur just ran over and took away his machete and threw it in the forest. Then the teacher woke up, saw that what happened, saw the machete, and never came back. He realized he could be killed while he's taking a nap, but he was still very abusive. And by cholera, malaria, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is gradually all of his, before he even was born, two or three of his siblings died. Afterwards, they'd all died. He was the only one left. And his father and so many people dying around him. And he had so many problems in his body health, if you read his autobiography. But did he give up? No, he's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We wouldn't be sitting here today. So these devotees, things are taken away, but they don't become discouraged. So Bali Maharaj also not discouraged. Prahlad Maharaj, his father, Aranyakashipu. Rather, he's praying. Prabhupada said that also. The difference is that I am always praying not to fall down. Not only not to fall down, but in ecstasy. Svastyastu visrasa kala prasidatam dayantu bhutani shivo mito deya. The wonderful prayer of Prahlad Maharaj. Why is he so respected by Bali? You have to read his prayers and know them. And then you can understand, we can see, wow, it's amazing, this Prahlad Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj was so respectful of Prahlad Maharaj, but he couldn't offer respect at this particular time. Prahlad Maharaj could understand the situation as it unfolds. So is this prayer, Prahlad Maharaj says, and Prabhupada put this prayer in the beginning in the fifth canto. When you open the book, Svastyastu, in 5.2, there's always a verse in the beginning of the, at least later on it was verses, when you open the book. So this prayer is considered very important, like Prabhupada in that book. Svastyastu vishvasa kala prasiditam. He's praying. And this is, he's praying for Bali Maharaj also. That all envious persons, or any of us with any envy, may be pacified. An envious person is worse than a snake. Many times Prabhupada will give that example. Mantro shodi vasha sarpa kala kena nivaryate. That a snake is the most envious entity. Although he's the most envious entity, but a human being, when he's envious, is much worse than a snake. A snake might bite, you know, one or two people or something in his lifetime. I don't know if they keep a record. Hey, you know, I bit so-and-so. But notch another one up. Hey, did you hear about so-and-so? He bit the fourth person. Fourth guy he bit. No, we don't know that. But human beings, they take great pleasure. Oh, we killed that whole village. We blew up these people, killed them. They're so much more heinous, vicious than a snake. So Prahlad Maharaj is always praying for the welfare, not only Bali, but for all of us. Svastyastu vishvasa, the whole universe may be pacified and peaceful. Svastyastu vishvasa, kala prasidatam, pacified. Dayantu bhutani shivo, and what? How will they do it? By bhakti, he says. No matir bhakti, haitiki, by causeless bhakti. There's not another way, secondary. Might be some inferior something. But by this bhakti process, he's praying. Svastyastu sasa kala prasidatam dhyantu bhutani shivo mito. They will look after each other. Their welfare, shivam. Shivam means welfare. Shivam mito dhya. Dhya means to think, meditate on. Manascha badram bhajatam arhoksaje. Their minds, manascha badram, will be become very auspicious, by offering devotional service to Ahoksaja, that person who is beyond our feeble, maligned, envious senses. So this is the condition of the material world, the conditioned souls. There, as Prahlad Maharaj says in another place, Grasatam, what is it? They're eating, devouring one another. Jivajivasajivanam. One envious person hates everyone else. Everyone wants to be the king of the world or something. You know? Everyone is. So, Bali Maharaj also, he became king of the universe, the world. But became a little puffed up. Therefore, Vamanadeva came, had a little nice pastime with him, took away all of his stuff. Although he was very surrendered, he was ready to give everything. But even if you're ready to give everything, then Vaman says, well, I can take more than what you think you have. You think you can give me everything, but you see, you didn't have it in the first place. You didn't have anything. Okay, I have a third step. What's the procedure now that I already got everything on the second step? Even though I'm a dwarf, we were hearing how the irony that he's not even, not only, not even a full-sized person, and a little boy or a dwarf, if he's a little boy and a dwarf, he's already a little boy, but if he's a dwarf boy, he's only really small like that, like about 2 feet tall. Small. So his foot, you know, steps are not too much. Boom, boom. So he's beyond whatever we can conceive. Adhoksaja. Bajatar adhoksaja. Manasya badram. Bajatar adhoksaja. So Prahlad Maharaj is speaking these prayers. That's why he's earning this respect from Bali Maharaj. Because devotees are respectful of everybody. Samam charantam, you see equally. But someone who is respectable, the level of Prahlad Maharaj, one should feel. And Bali felt very ashamed with his head down. I cannot offer respects to Prahlad Maharaj. It's not just Bali has to offer respect, we have to offer respect to Prahlad Maharaj. Not just by saying, oh, Prahlad Maharaj, yeah, he's a little kid and his father tortured him, but by reading his words, studying the Siddhantas that are there in his prayers, his instructions. Pumso vashishatam hyayus taradam jajidatmanaha. You can't tire of hearing these things. Mugdashya balya kaishare. When he's a little kid, he's crazy, stupid, fool. You're wasting your life 10 years, first 10 years, vimshati. And the last 10 years, you're invalid. Prabhupada says invalid. Invalid. Wasting the last 10 years, 20 years. And in between, half of it was wasted sleeping already. And even if you have, okay, we say half of the, you just chopped off 40 years. Prabhupada says you live 100 years, so first 20, vimsati, wasted as a foolish, rascal little kid. Last 20, you're invalid. So in between, you got 60, half are sleeping. So out of 30, if you lived 100, which most people, of course, are not living to 100, but the rest, he's a madman. And just in case you thought that you had 30 years left, but you had, but you wasted it as a madman. So these are some of Prahlad Maharaj's nectarian instructions. Bali Maharaj is fully absorbed in knowing those instructions, knowing it's his grandfather after all. He cannot offer respects. And we should also feel that we're not offering enough respect to Prahlad Maharaj. And try to more and more strive to realize how wonderful the instructions and pastimes of these personalities are. Srimad Bhagavatam and other books, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. So any questions, comments? Varuna.
Bali Maharaj, he was ashamed, or he felt humble in front of his grandfather. But in this pastime, I mean, in one sense, we can say he really didn't do anything wrong, and Vamandev tricked him. So I'm trying to understand where, as we're trying to become devotees, trying to become humble, if it happens something like that to us, we would justify, hey, but I didn't do anything wrong, you know.
But he felt he did something wrong because he thought he could give him the universe. But he didn't really have the universe to give.
Yeah, my question is, like, even if, let's say we do something wrong, or we say, okay, I'll be humble and I'll accept humility. But in our heart, we don't feel that. So it's better to at least I justify myself that, well, I better just assert myself and say what I have to say rather than be humble but don't feel it in my heart. So my question to you is, where do we become, we have humility, and where do we assert ourselves? How, and how to, you know, discern or to know when to do what?
There's many different points of etiquette. Just like when Prabhupada was conversing with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's brother, Lalit Prasad, and he felt strongly, Prabhupada felt strongly that his Bir Nagar, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born, and Lalit Prasad stayed there, he was staying there, that Prabhupada said, he asked him, well, let us come in here, we're going to make a nice temple for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and a place to remember Bhaktivinoda Thakur's greatest personality. And Lalit Prasad was kind of thinking about it, but he never really made a move to do anything. So then Prabhupada was questioning him, like, do you think what you're doing is good? Do you think what you're doing here by not letting us come and fix this place up, is that good, like that? Now, I don't remember what Lalit Prasad was thinking, but he never really came forward. In fact, he was sometimes, some devotees were very attracted to Lalit Prasad. They would go there, and later on he made a little, you know, movement. Although he was very critical of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, you know, anyway, that's a whole other ball game. Anyway, it's funny, kind of. But so Prabhupada said, you can question, because Prabhupada didn't feel like, well, he's a superior person. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, he's Mahabhagavat practically, he's fully absorbed. But Prabhupada said, because I'm a junior of his, I cannot directly just go and smash him and say, you are a rascal, this is Bhaktivinoda's place, and you're sitting here doing nothing. But I can question him, do you think this is right? What you're doing is right? And he did it in a very forceful way. So still he was maintaining humility in a way, and at the same time challenging him. He said, you can do that. So that can be done. That's just a tiny part of an answer to a big question. So I just thought of it right offhand. But Prabhupada felt, and when he first came to the Lalit Prasad, he said, Lalit Prasad is like my... But Prabhupada knew the history of the, you know, the whole Gaudiya thing. He knew that. But when he came there in front of his disciples to show, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, and this is, you know... And there's always a chance he could change. But he had been for years critical of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Oh, you know, his points were not very strong. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, my brother Lalit Prasad, he takes Bhaktivinoda Thakur as Baba, father, but I take him as Guru. But so, of course, Lalit Prasad wouldn't think that. He would think, you know, anyway, something different. So, the contentious points were there for many years. It's not like a new thing. Prabhupada went there, wasn't like, you know. But he felt, well, we'll try this. And there was a chance he could change. But at the time, he didn't change at the time. Anyway, that's one point of etiquette. But as far as if you didn't feel real humble, then hey, one should always feel humble. But Lord Chaitanya, he could have said, well, why should I challenge or speak with Prakashananda or Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? He could have just been humble and just said, well, just, no. Then there's no preaching. And when the devotees sometimes would say to Prabhupada, well, you know, we go out and we talk to these people, they're not interested. He said, well, that's why you're preaching to them. If they were already devotees, then we wouldn't, But there's a lot of people who don't go out. You know, Prabhupada felt like he had to go out. He could have been just humble, stay in Vrindavan. Yes. Even Gorgashodas Babaji, Prabhupada quoted him. I don't know if he paraphrased it, but he said his mood was, I have no power to stop them. They're all rascal. Let them go to hell. So at the same time, he's feeling that he has no power. He's humble. At the same time, he's saying they're rascal. And you know, we know that he was very heavy, you know. He would tell these householders who just got married or something. They'd say, well, we need some instruction. Yes, yes, they'd come back and say, well, don't eat with your wife. Then he'd come back with more instruction. Don't live with your wife. Don't. It's like, you know, he's super heavy, you know, but he's in a position to do that. we don't have the Adhikar, we may not be able to do it. But at the same time, you know. Well, we heard the story from Gurudas that Prabhupada told him the other night, how the Narad Muni's cobra disciple, who became so humble that the kids were throwing rocks at him. And look at that snake, it doesn't do anything. Wow. So he went back to Narad Muni. Narad Muni said, well, you're still a cobra, they have no right to do that, so show them the hoods. Show them the hood. And Prabhupada went like that. I forgot what that was in reference to. Anyway, he told that story. Anything else?
It's the pure devotee. We have to become pure devotees to have all these different wonderful qualities. But I was thinking how Prabhupada's humble, but he's simultaneously bold. It seems like opposite quality. So another thing is that Bhakti Siddhanta, he was explaining that like sometimes we think, oh, I'm very fallen, I can't really do anything, I'm insignificant. But Bhakti Siddhanta said that's another cheating process to think of yourself insignificant. So you have to be very expert.
No, one devotee said, I'm the most fallen, probably not the most anything. Because then we start thinking, I'm the most fallen. No, I'm more humble than you, man.
But Bhakti Siddhanta says that's a cheating process.
Yeah,
I thought that was very interesting that he said it's another cheating process. See,
if you read the whole,
to get out of surrendering. You know,
if you read the whole biography, you'll see there were many complex parts of his program. You know, when he was sometimes challenged, some students, smart students in Calcutta, when he was preaching to talking to them, they were challenging, saying, you're only giving, you go and you preach to high class men, you don't do anything, you don't give food to these poor people like that. You're not udara, you're not magnanimous. So then, Srila Bhaktivedanta said, then you are udara. If you are magnanimous, then why are you finding fault with me? If you're so magnanimous and you're udara. Quieted him down fast. If you're more magnanimous than I am. So, and like when Prabhupada was in that Uppsala University situation where he was describing the Varnashram, the four orders and the sudras, and so one, they challenged him right away and said, so you're saying you're first class? No, no, I'm fourth class. I'm servant, Prabhupada said. So it's very disarming. Therefore, Prabhupada Saraswati has his verse, Dante Nidayatinakam Padeo Napacha, taking a straw in my teeth, I fall at your feet. Dante Nidayatinakam Padeo Napacha, and yet I am crying 100 times over, Kaku Shatam Bhavini, please. Because when you, Prabhupada said, you go to someone very humbly like that, with a straw, in India especially, Nityananda Haridas used to have a straw. But you know, Haridas in their teeth. Someone they'd knock on someone's door, open, and they'd fall down flat with a straw in their teeth. And also, so people become very disarmed. Oh, what is that? And you praise them also. Hey, sadhava, you're a sadhu. You're a great, good person. Hey, sadhava sakrame bahaya durad. Goranga chanda charane kurutana ragam. So then they're more ready to hear you. You're acting, or you're very humble. They think, oh, and you're flattering them also. People like to be flattered, calling them sadhu. Finally, they say, well, what is it? What are you trying to say? I mean, you're very humble, you're very nice, you understand my glories. And then you say, Goranga chanda charane kurutana. Give up everything and just give up all your nonsense and simply surrender to the feet of Chaitanya Chandra like that.
Was that a businessman? He had a lot of opulence. So Prabhupada told him, "Oh, so you are a thief?" He said, "No, no, I only take a little." He said, "Oh, so you're just a little thief?" And he became one of our benefactors.
Might be, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's one of
life member. there was that story that Sadaji Witlal or something, he was head of the Hindu Vishwa Parishad during Prabhupada's time. He used to come to see Prabhupada in Bombay. I saw him a couple of times. Very wealthy man, a sweet shop owner. You remember, right? What's his name? Huh? Sadaji Witlal. You gave him more names? How many names did he have? He had so many names? Okay. So, Prabhupada was quoting in Hindi. Maybe you know it. You should learn it. But in Hindi, it sounds better. But in English, he was saying, Bhaktivedanta Swami has put all of the Swamis on the black list. In other words, they've all become... So Prabhupada was laughing and chuckling in a room conversation, saying, yes. And he was saying it in Hindi. He understands. Yeah, this is very good. He liked that. He has put all other Swamis in the whole India and all over the world and on the black list. You saw him coming in?
Huh?
You saw him when he came to see Prabhupada?
No, that time no. No, I'm just saying that I don't know, maybe even non-disciples that came in Srila Prabhupada's presence, immediately they feel humble like that. And like Bali Maharaj is feeling humble in front of Prahlada.
Well, Prabhupada had a way of making people humble, you know, just by just
of
being there.
Purity.
I remember sitting in his quarters and he was telling me in Bharadvajal about art for about an hour. It's not recorded, but so he called me, he called Bharadvajal. He liked one painting there, still there, Bhakti Santa Saraswati. So after the conversation, long time, 40, 50 minute conversation, and it was pretty much fun conversation. Sorry that's not recorded, but only in my head, Bharadvajal's head. But at the end, so he said, so you have done this painting of my Guru Maharaj? You know, where Prabhupada sits, and then if you're facing Prabhupada, it's behind you, right? The painting's behind you. But when he said it, you practically, it wasn't a question of being humble, it was a question of actually pinch myself to see if I did that painting. I completely lost any idea that I was the doer for that one moment. It's not even theoretical, it was just like I had to actually ask myself for a split second, did I do that painting? You know, the way Prabhupada said it, oh, you have done this painting, it was just, you just felt, it wasn't any artificial thing, you just felt like you were not the doer, and it's not an artificial thing. You just didn't feel like you did. That's why I said, I went like this, like, I did it. So that is not humility, but that's just realization. You might get it only 1 second out of 100 million years, or you might be fully imbued with it all the time. And then
I sometimes think of that he brings a context, an environment with Prabhupada that's in your presence, sins go far away. So you don't even practically notice, you're just kind of like in it. And then when you look back to what the position that actually I'm in, it's such a shock that some of the recovering method of that is natural humility. You see this, the purity of actual existence, and then you're there for a moment, associating, feeling wonderful, but then it's time to get back into your own existence again, and it's, so the natural.
We read the story of the big Zamindar king of Tripura, Raj, and he was going to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta regularly, but then he was thinking, in his mind, he was thinking, I'm the king, I think it was Tripura, I'm the king of this place, and what am I bowing to this sadhu for? Next time I come, see him, I'm not even going to bow to him. Let me see what he does anyway, see if he's, how he takes it. So as soon as next time he came, he was thinking that right before he walked in the door. As soon as he saw Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he immediately had to bow.
I think this was during Guru Puja or evening arati. Srila Prabhupada was sitting on Vyasasana. So all the devotees, they were dancing. And then some Indian guys came, you know, he started also dancing, you know, how they dance like this. And Prabhupada said, raise your hand, rascal, why are you surrendering to Maya? Surrender to Lord Chaitanya.
Raise your hand, rascal. Okay, that's enough. Hare Krishna.